Spirit Blade Underground, episode 285. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system 5. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 285.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground Podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and very unique community you're invited to check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Patter Fransden from Spirit Blade Productions, where we produce entertainment and resources designed to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and me to live more and more for Christ. For more information and free goodies, please check out spiritblade.net. Wait a minute, I'm not Patter Frans. Did I say Patter Fransden? I did, didn't I? Patter Fransden. I'm on a bit of a tear because last week I said Kim Wick came on board to do the editing for the articles posted at ChristianGeekCentral.com, and she very graciously emailed and corrected me and was very nice about it, and I'm a big doofus. So anyway, Kim Wiki. Wiki. I said Wick. It's Wiki. Kim Wiki is doing a wonderful job. She said Wiki as in Wikipedia. Do you say Wikipedia, or is it, or maybe she said Wiki. I'll have to check the email now. But anyway, Wiki. Kim Wiki. I'm terrible, and I should have totally, because you grew up with a name like Patter Fransden, and I chose today two of my personal favorite mispronunciations. Patter, which I don't know how you get that from the spelling of my name. Pat, maybe you go Patter, Patter. I got Painter once. I don't know where they got the Phantom N. I thought that was interesting. And then for some reason, a lot of times people want to swap around that S and that D in Fransden. It's a silent D, but people kind of get freaked out by it. They don't know what to do with it. They get flustered and like, I'll try it here, Fransden. So lots of fun. But as Kim mentioned to me in her email, having these kind of whacked out names is really helpful for avoiding telemarketers and junk mail. So anyway, Kim, very sorry about that. Kim Wiki. But I do want to thank Kim again for coming on board and handling the editing and proofing of the articles that go up at ChristianGeekCentral.com now, which is a nice load off of me. But anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's talk about today. On the show today, I'm going to talk about my reasons for leaving behind my long-running comic book hobby. I've been a hardcore comic book collector and reader for like almost 20 years, specifically mostly a hardcore DC comic book fan. And recently, now as of the last 2 weeks, as the last month now it's been close to, I am no longer reading any DC comics. In fact, I'm no longer collecting any comic books at all. At least not technically. I'll maybe get into that when I talk about it. But anyway, so I'm going to talk about that. And then also I'm going to share with you guys an interview with the host of the Theology Gaming Podcast, which I think you guys will find interesting. And then I'll also share some recent thoughts I've had about relationships and discomfort and the specific relevance I think it may have, may or may not, for us all as geeks. All right, let's get to it.
The future. A world where the quest for truth has ended. Although some of us are trying to keep it alive.
Hey, Rand, do you think Vincent's okay?
He's become more tense and distant every day since Isaiah died.
I'll make sure we get back on track, even if I gotta save everybody from themselves.
We've got our share of enemies.
Hey, you can't come here!
Take him down!
Rand, what is that thing?
Look out!
Surprise!
Oh,
We're looking for others to join us.
What's with the blue robes? These guys wizards or something?
Santafi are powerful weavers of miracles.
We thought we'd found some allies.
Encircle them, brothers.
They cannot return with us to the village.
And we must purify this place of their stain.
We were wrong.
Ready, brothers. Let's begin.
Burn, ungodly filth!
What do you want?
To make you ours or to make you despair?
Spirit Blade Productions presents...
Do you have any idea how much I will make you suffer? The horrific agony that I will inflict...
Spirit Blade, Dark Ritual.
Hell will be a refuge for you when I'm finished.
For more information, visit spiritblade.net.
Okay, that hard, sticky thing you pulled off, that's part of the skull, right? And this pinkish white stuff is the brain?
Yes. Might I suggest an alternative?
No, listen to me. We can't turn back now. I've got to know what they're thinking.
Have you considered talking to them?
All right, sew that back on. We'll give it a try.
Well, I'm talking with Zachary Oliver of Theology Gaming at theologygaming.com. Zachary, thanks for carving out some time to talk to me.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, so what is this animal, Theology Gaming?
Theology Gaming was an idea that I came up with after I had finished graduate school. Now, I had applied to a bunch of theology PhD programs, and I wasn't really sure whether I was going to get in or not. And so, in the back of my mind, I had this little idea forming about blogging, possibly. And what happened eventually was that I didn't get into any schools I applied to, and I said, well... I don't think I'm much of an academic anyway, so I thought I'd start Theology Gaming. And that's why it exists now.
Awesome. So, I mean, where did the, you decided to go, you said, okay, I'm not an academic, so I'll do this instead. But what made you land on this? Like, where did the idea of Theology Gaming come from, and why are you doing it?
The idea mostly came from the fact that I've been playing video games since I was a really, really young child. And at the same time, my parents raised me Christian. So I've been going to churches and thinking about Christian themes all my life. So what happened over time was that I kind of have this amalgamation of theology on one hand, thinking about Christian themes, reading the Bible, etc., and playing lots and lots of video games on the other side. So... I find that there are connections between thinking about Christianity and thinking about Jesus Christ and also about how video games work, the rules, the narratives, the ways that people interact and engage with them. And I also find that a lot of times there's a connection between the idea of Christian community and video game community. And I wanted to think, well, there must be other Christian gamers out there. And so this is my little way to contribute to kind of video game culture in a way that is Christ-focused, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned, you know, that kind of experience of playing video games and just seeing a lot of relevance to the Christian experience there. And that's something that really resonates with me. I think the more, especially as video games are becoming better and better at telling stories, and like that line is blurring between like film storytelling and video game storytelling, of course, video games being much more interactive, but in terms of like the acting, the scripts, they can have something that's every bit as complex and philosophical. And then you throw in the themes of fantasy and sci-fi, two of the biggest themes in the video game world. And those genres are just ripe for metaphor, for expressing viewpoints, and so it's almost unavoidable. I mean, maybe I'm just that particular kind of nerd, but it almost seems unavoidable when you're playing the video games that are being made today to be processing someone's philosophical worldview at the same time. What kinds of things are on the Theology Gaming website, and tell me what like a typical episode is like.
Theology Gaming is a podcast, for one, of course. We started that about 6 months ago. I had the idea, you know, hey, mostly I just write every day. I have one essay that I write every day, and then I kind of have those going since May of last year.
Okay.
So I'm somewhere in the 400 mark. I'm not sure how many.
Wow.
And I've met a bunch of people on the internet who are also like-minded and like to talk about these things. We have at least 10 writers who have contributed to the site so far.
Nice.
And on the what happened basically later was that I ended up going to PAX East, and from there I made a bunch of contacts in the video game industry, and from there I've been able to do some really strange things with the podcast. I've just been finding people who are Christians who also work in the game industry, and they're really surprised that there's like this site where people talk about theology and video games.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, they'll be less and less surprised as time goes on.
Yeah, I would hope, right?
Now, who do you think would, I mean, you know, when you're dealing with video games, that's a really broad appeal. But within that broad appeal, who do you think would like just be especially stoked about your show and your site and what you're up to?
Okay, so our shows tend to go between a general what are we playing segment, and those ones tend to involve a lot of humor and lighthearted fun.
Okay.
Some of them may be a little offensive, but it's mostly about us talking about game mechanics and how they're interesting or what are we playing for whatever particular reason.
Okay.
And then sometimes we discuss prevalent theology topics that come up in video games and Christianity. Like Game Church sometimes posts articles and we talk about those. Game Church is another subsidiary site. Not necessarily started by me, but that was one of the ones that started up doing essay content at the same time as Theology Gaming.
Okay.
And I like to interact with their authors, and we get an interesting conversation going about things like feminism and how does the way that God constructs the universe similar to the way that a person constructs video games and their rules. And those are some of our more bizarre ones. We haven't done one of those in a while, but I bet we'll get back to that. And then the third kind, which I call the interview series, rather jokingly, because I don't really separate them from the rest, that's just an interview between me and somebody that I find particularly fascinating. And sometimes we get into their religious background, and sometimes we don't. But I don't care whether or not they're Christian particularly. Mm-hmm. I just like hearing about them and about how they think about Christianity, and then that gives me a good launching off point to talk to them.
Sure. Yeah.
And those conversations end up being pretty fascinating.
I'll bet. Now, you kind of mentioned like some video games that or you mentioned the fact that video games will bring up themes and stuff like that without having to go into any detail. And I know I'm kind of putting you on the spot here, but what games, can you just name a few titles that maybe you've talked about recently that you found something interesting, you know, that that made them worth talking about in terms of their theme?
If I had to say, I usually find things in the games I'm just playing offhandedly.
Okay.
So right now I'm playing a pretty old game called Ridge Racer 6.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm utterly enjoying it. I picked it up for $5.
Nice.
It's fantastic. I'm not sure why this kind of video game went out of style, but the stylish arcade racer has basically disappeared from the landscape. And so what I'm finding is that I'm just really enjoying the physics of the thing, even though they're completely unrealistic and make no sense. There's like a joy in just drifting around corners at maximum speed and not caring about bumping into walls or whatever. And I find that there's this really subtle joy to just like simple things in life. Like, you know, just playing video games and, you know, talking about it with other people like yourself.
Yeah.
And I just like talking about video games with people, and it doesn't really matter what their religious orientation is or whatever. I find that video games are a common link between me and other people.
Mm.
And I find that's a really good tool just for relationships, but also for evangelizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll relate a story today. The last couple of days I've gone to GameStop. I'm not sure why, but I went in to just browse, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the people come up to me and they go, well, are you looking for anything in particular? And then I end up just talking to that person for 45 minutes to an hour.
Wow.
Just, you know, out of hand, not intending to do it, but I don't know whether I'm a good listener or they're just good conversationalists, but we end up striking up a conversation. I get their gamer tag, and then, you know, we continue to talk more after that. And that stuff's really fascinating to me. Just that video games can kind of open up a connection between people that I haven't really seen in, like, books and in movies. It's just not the same because you're basically sharing an interactive experience across, like, two minds. It's really fascinating.
Yeah, well, I mean, with film or some kind of, like, basically set in stone entertainment medium, people might have different perspectives on what they experience, but the material that they're experiencing is identical pretty much. Whereas with a video game, my experience could be very different from yours, so I'm going to have my added perspective in addition to a different experience to talk with you about. So yeah, I agree with you. There's very ripe opportunities there for conversation and just kind of finding common ground.
Like Grand Theft Auto, for example.
Oh yeah.
A lot of people have different experiences just messing around in the open sandbox.
Mm.
You know, doing stupid jumps in sandboxes, you know, jumping around on bicycles or whatever the heck they do.
Yeah, and that can even give you a read on a little bit on a person's personality. I mean, it's not as simple as, oh, you know, you went around doing this. That must mean you like to do that. You'd love to do that in real life or, you know, nothing like that. But you do kind of get an idea of, okay, so this person, you know, is more interested in questing and in the story, or this person's more interested in just kind of exploring the world and seeing what they're up to, what they can do with their character. You know, you can get some interesting reads on people's personalities. So what do you, with all these ripe opportunities, you know, that the medium of gaming brings, that conversation about gaming brings, what's a little bit of your vision? What do you hope to accomplish with the Theology Gaming?
Honestly, I went into it not knowing exactly what I was doing. Hmm. So I wouldn't call it so much confusion as in I don't know how to write for a general audience.
Hmm.
So it's taken me about a year to figure out how I like to write.
Okay.
Because for the majority of my life, I've been writing for school teachers and professors. and they have a very specific way that they want you to write.
Okay.
They want you to footnote everything, and they want you to cover specific topics within an essay format.
Okay.
And if you go all the way back, right, you'll see that my first stuff that I did is really stodgy, I would say. And this goes for the podcast too. I mean, whenever you start out with something new, it takes time.
Sure, sure.
I didn't think it would be a network of people at first.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would just be me kind of saying things and people kind of responding or not responding.
Yeah.
But through the site, I found a lot of like-minded people who are also interested in the same things.
Awesome.
And then that's how it ended up just continuing and snowballing.
Awesome. Well, I think what you're doing is great, and I look forward to seeing what it just how it changes and where it all goes in the future. So to everyone listening, you guys can see what Theology Gaming is up to at theologygaming.com. Zachary, thank you again so much for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you for talking to me.
I've always been a fan of the characters of the DC Universe. They can't be matched for iconic status or monumental power. While other comic book companies are often grounding their characters in part by limiting their abilities, DC characters are known for constantly exploring and pushing the limits of their powers. If you look at the typical power level of a DC character to, I mean, Marvel would be kind of the most recognizable company aside from DC, but really I think this applies to most other comic book companies as well. On average, the DC characters are more powerful. Their storylines, at least in their golden age, like when that Mark Waid kind of started with his run on The Flash, were about what I call the Golden Age. Obviously, it's not technically what is known as the Golden Age of comics, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, but they've been more about exploring the limits of their powers, the ramifications of having this kind of power. So anyway, they're really known for just kind of these bigger scale type power conflicts. And though Marvel Comics pioneered emotional and psychological realism beginning in the 60s, which I'm continually grateful for, DC Comics took everything a step further beginning in the mid-80s, with works like the Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, which influenced not just DC, but all of comic book storytelling and the kinds of stories that were told, the kinds of psychological and emotional realism brought into stories. And in the late 90s and early 2000s, DC Comics seemingly entered a golden age of storytelling with the return of the Big Seven to the Justice League, you know, the big iconic DC characters, all of them put on one team at the same time, instead of, you know, third stringers and stuff, and maybe one or two big names, which they'd been doing for decades, and then eventually got back to, unfortunately, later on. But soon after that kind of resurgence of the Big Seven, writers like Geoff Johns and Gail Simone gave new life to old properties by refreshing the motivations of the characters they touched and reminding us what makes these characters so interesting to begin with. After graduating from high school and getting my first job, I finally had some money to dedicate to my hobbies, and for years, most of it has gone toward comic books. I began by purchasing around 5 comics a month, but that number steadily grew until I reached an average of about 15 comics a month, not including the odd Marvel. I like some of the Marvel Ultimate Universe stuff, or the miscellaneous comics that I would try out from time to time, or the crossover event stories DC Comics featured once or twice a year. So my bare minimum for a long time was about 15 books a month, but because of the regular output of other kinds of things, it was usually closer to, I want to say, 20 books a month. DC Comics seemed to hit its peak for my tastes right around the crossover event called Infinite Crisis, or possibly just after, in the year-long weekly crossover title 52. But after this time, I began to sense decisions being guided by something other than good storytelling. The smell of money and politics seemed to be creeping into the DC brand. First, with the weekly follow-up to 52 called Countdown, which lacked the skilled writing of its predecessor and felt a lot like an attempt to recapture that lightning in a bottle that 52 had, where they somehow, in some crazy way, put out this weekly title that was written wonderfully. I don't know how they pulled that off. It was crazy. All the coordination and the good writers put on that. And they tried to capture that again, you know, with Countdown, and it just did not happen. Following Countdown was another weekly book featuring Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman titled Trinity, which I didn't read for more than 2 issues. Meanwhile, the rest of the books in the DC Universe seemed to be losing their magic. And at the same time, I began noticing the beginning of what I guess I would call a diversity agenda in the DC Universe. Now, before I go any further, I should say that I don't mind mixing up and broadening representation of ethnicity and demographics in comics at all. I've read and enjoyed all kinds of books with ethnic minorities and homosexual characters, but these demographics began to be introduced without subtlety, almost as if to say, hey, I'm a minority. I'm a demographic that, you know, is important to reach out to. I think a better approach would have been to simply tell good stories with diverse demographics represented, rather than have the Latino characters speaking in Spanglish to the point of caricature, and most every lesbian or gay character getting a, quote, coming out of the closet subplot. I mean, you could just start seeing them a mile away. For 2 San Diego Comic-Cons in a row, which I didn't go to, but they used to put the podcasts of their panels up online for anybody to listen to after the cons were done, at least the San Diego ones and sometimes the New York ones too. And I don't know why they stopped doing that. My little pessimistic mind says, yeah, that's because they don't want everybody to know, you know, how everything's going down the toilet, you know. But, you know, I'm sure there could be a million other reasons that have nothing to do with them not wanting to have other people know, you know, and complain, have reason to complain. But for 2 San Diego Comic-Cons in a row, I listened to those podcasts of the panels, and I heard, man, multiple readers complain, stepping up to the Q&A mic, that there wasn't enough diversity in comics. It was like somebody would say something that someone had already mentioned, like, four questions previous. They would bring up, I'd really like to see more female characters. And there'd be a round of applause or whatever, you know. Again, I don't mind. I don't mind female characters. Batgirl has been, like, my favorite book recently. So anyway, but I kept hearing that kind of as a theme. And then I would hear the publishers and creators vow with each one of these comments and questions to change that, to bring those demographics forward, to bring forward more lesbian and gay characters, more Latinos, more people in wheelchairs, more women, and all this stuff. And they did. They made good on that, on those vows. But two things went wrong. They did too much for too few. And they did it seemingly in favor of compelling storytelling. I mean, if we're going to be all about diversity, well, okay, I'm kind of saying this mockingly, understand, please, but where's my demographic? You know, I'm a non-denominational Christian who believes every word of the Bible is true in its literal context. However, I'm not into politics. I'm not into picket signs. I love homosexuals and have had a number of homosexual friends over the years, all of whom I am still on good terms with. So I'm far from homophobic. However, I don't believe the homosexual lifestyle is God's intended design for anyone. I'm not shocked by the behavior of those who don't observe the same moral values that I do. I don't expect non-Christians to adhere to biblical moral values, nor do I look down on them for choosing not to believe in the Bible. Yet my hope is that everyone would turn to Jesus for rescue from their self-destructive natures. Now, that's kind of in this weird place that just doesn't ever seem, that type of Christian never seems to be represented. There's usually, it's usually the extreme, like the extreme kind of watered down version of Christianity, or it's that extreme, like, boy, I hate everyone because they're not like me type of Christian. And I gotta say, I am not unique. That's not a unique demographic that I've just described. That's not a unique worldview that I've just described. There are millions in America alone who would describe themselves the same way. So where is that demographic being represented in DC Comics? Nearly the only representations of Christianity we get in comics are, as I said, stereotypes. You know, you'll get stereotypes of Catholics or extreme or watered down nominal Christians or legalistic Protestants of some kind. Okay, now, to come off that, like I said, I request that mockingly. To clarify, I don't blame DC for not prioritizing representations of my demographic. My real point here is that they can't represent every demographic the way they have been attempting to do with a favored handful. And they shouldn't try. That's not playing to the strengths of superhero comic books. It's a distraction from what superhero books have always been about when they are at their best. And that's the conflict between absolute good and terrible evil on a fantastical scale. There seems to be a relationship between the diversifying of the DC universe and the decline in good storytelling. Now, I'm not saying the two are incompatible. But pure speculation on my part, but I wonder if creative energy that should have been channeled into just telling the best story possible was spread out to help figure out how to better diversify the DCU. Pure speculation, but the timing of the two trends makes me wonder. With the birth of the New 52, DC Comics' recreation of its entire continuity, well, it's kind of a mixed blend. It's not entirely new continuity. It's a bit confusing, actually. Stubbing of the toe, I guess, or stumble or something that I can talk about another time. They should have just done a completely from the ground up relaunch, but they kind of kept bits of the old continuity and didn't clarify which parts they were keeping and which parts they weren't. You just kind of have to go along for the ride and figure out the whole mess. It's bad choice. But anyway, but with the birth of this New 52, these trends I've mentioned leaped forward. Classic characters were reinvented instantly to fit into minority demographics. New minority characters were introduced while established ones vanished altogether. And in what seems to be almost another indication of DC's desire to be, quote, young and relevant, unquote, And that's, I'm not, I say quote unquote, but I'm not really quoting anybody. I'm just, you know, that's just kind of like a, I guess, kind of a catchphrase. We want to be young and we want to be relevant and all that kind of stuff. And I that's what I think is going on here. They've said they want to reach out to younger readers. And of course that word relevant is thrown around all the time. But anyway, what that seems to be kind of what's motivating that. And certainly in keeping with that, everyone over the age of 40 died in the DC universe. Now, okay, that's obviously exaggeration, but consider that Ma and Pa Kent are both dead from day one in the New 52. They died in the New 52 continuity before Clark Kent ever became Superman. He certainly can't go home and see either of them on the weekends. I mean, Pa Kent died previous to the New 52 in a storyline that Geoff Johns wrote, and I just thought that was a bonehead decision to take away that thing. Now, both of them are gone in the DC universe. All he's got is memories. You know, we can do flashback stories, but he can't go home to them on the weekends. I think that is such a terrible, terrible tool for storytelling that they've thrown away. The entire roster of the Justice Society of America has been replaced by entirely new characters. You might think I'm exaggerating, but hear me out. All are in their 20s or 30s and do little more than share the same name and powers with their veteran predecessors. The original Justice Society, who represented the long history of the DC Universe and provided wisdom and perspective to the younger generation of heroes, had this really interesting tie to, you know, retro, this World War II kind of feel. All of that is gone. This certainly feeds the already natural attitude of younger readers who no doubt think that, you know, they know more than older people do. That's kind of the natural thinking of someone that's, you know, a teenager or maybe in their 20s. You know, I think we, you know, other people hang on to it too, but I think it's very prevalent in like junior high, high school, 20s. It's very popular and natural to just think, you know, I know what's going on more than these old people who are, you know, out of touch with culture or whatever. And I think this decision to wipe out the Justice Society and recast them all as younger, you know, people certainly feeds into that idea. Unfortunately, this attitude is not healthy, and it only leads to younger generations repeating the mistakes of the older ones rather than benefiting from their experience. We also lose any potential models of good relationships between adult children and their parents. How often is it, you know, a tired old plot device to just have people have daddy issues or mommy issues or whatever, you know? Oh, man. Some great stories can be told with functional families. Resetting the DC universe also removed the married status of nearly every superhero, so we can say goodbye to any healthy example of marriage and family, and say hello to a new age of heroes bouncing from one romance to the next, each time thinking, she's the one, and soon after realizing, oh, she's not, where did it all go wrong? You know, why not let the Playboys be Playboys? I get, you know, Oliver Queen and Bruce Wayne being, you know, womanizers and jumping from girl to girl. I get that. So why not let the Playboys be Playboys, sleep around, have dysfunction and all that kind of stuff, but chart a more interesting course, a more unique course, sadly enough, for the rest. One in which we can see a relationship truly evolve and grow as time passes. I don't know. Maybe far too many families are damaged today, and the current crop of writers at DC doesn't contain anyone who knows how to write compelling stories with functional families, because maybe they don't have any experience in that to draw on. I don't know what's going on in that. But let me tell you, loving, functional families still have conflict to keep things interesting. But how they resolve conflict, how they recover from conflict, can make for wonderful, inspiring storytelling. Finally, I can't tell you how many times I've read a different book in the New 52 and felt like I'd read it before. Since all the heroes are relatively new at what they're doing, they're all going through the same insecure hero finding his place in the world routine. As a result, all of their personalities feel very much the same. The DC Universe has lost its history, its legacy, its maturity, its perspective, and its heart. But, you know, who am I to tell them how to sell comics? I'm going to be open and honest here for a second, guys. I'm a terrible businessman myself. Although from what I've been reading, the New 52 has not resulted in long-lasting sales stability or significant improvement of sales compared to the years leading up to the relaunch. They got a boost for about a year that was significant, but now they are reportedly doing only moderately better than they were before the launch of the New 52. However, in the interest of full disclosure, My fading love of DC Comics may not be only because of changes they have made. My wife and I are parents of young boys who ages, let's see, six? Yes, the oldest just turned six. Youngest is going to be three at the end of October. So we're parents of two boys, six and three, who demand time, energy, and that means that when I find some time for entertainment, I'm much more picky now than I was before. Add to this that my interest in other entertainment forms has been growing. Board games and video games are growing passions of mine. To fit all the kinds of entertainment I enjoy into my limited schedule, I've decided to only make time for the things that freaking wow me. I don't even have time anymore for something that I think is good or really great. It's got to be, holy crap, everyone with a pulse should envy the experience I'm having right now. Or I'm moving on to something else. Not because I'm a geek snob, I just don't got the time. When the New 52 launched, I tried out a lot of titles. I think I tried 26 new books the first month, but this quickly dropped down to about 15 books again. Over the last 2 years, the number has slowly dropped more and more as stories and characters interested me less and less. I shocked myself a few months ago when I dropped Aquaman. I never imagined I would drop a book written by Geoff Johns, who for years was my absolute favorite writer. I was like, this guy can do no wrong, but even he seems to have passed his peak lately. Then both Justice League books, which I've been finding forgettable, launched a crossover event that would require me to buy two more books for 2 or 3 months, followed by another crossover event requiring me to buy multiple Justice League titles each week for a month. Are you kidding me? Sorry, DC, I'm just seeing way too much business controlling your creative decisions. The only book that seems to continually float above it is, of all things, Batgirl, a book I initially passed on because I couldn't even imagine remotely enjoying it. I hate the entire concept of the character. But Gail Simone can apparently write the phone book and make it riveting. Even so, where I've come to is that I'd much rather appreciate her wonderful story arcs for the first time in a single sitting, which means that, yes, even Batgirl I am dropping to eventually follow again in trade paperback format. I haven't given up on comic books, or I haven't comics, maybe I should say. I've given up on comic books, maybe. But I'm taking a break from DC for a while to catch up on some Ultimate Marvel trade paperback. So I guess me talking about leaving comics behind is just a little bit misleading, because I am planning on, in some form, at whatever pace my interest, you know, compels me to keep up with comics on a trade paperback basis. But I'm probably going to be waiting until the trade paperbacks are available for really cheap, used on Amazon or something like that. I'm going back and trying out an old Vertigo series in back issues that are really cheap right now. It's Sandman Mystery Theater, if you haven't heard of it. It's pretty good so far. Meanwhile, I've got a subscription to Previews to help me keep a finger on the pulse of the DCU, assuming it doesn't flatline. Then in 6 to 12 months, I'll see which DC stories are being made into trades, see what the reviews are looking like, and go back to buying them on a case-by-case basis in that format. Funny enough, this is a decision that brings me full circle, since my comic book hobby began in junior high with exclusively trade paperback purchases. Part of all of this is because of a change in my stage of life, but a good chunk of it is choices that you've made, DC. You helped make me into a cautious comic book customer. I would love to someday be coaxed back into regular monthly purchases. I know the guy running my comic store would sure like that. But until then, thanks for the great memories. Speaking of which, come back soon to get my list of the top 20 pre-52 stories from the DC Universe.
The truth will set you free.
Truth is that which corresponds to fact or reality. That truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. And lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
Well, this week I'm taking a break from examining a specific passage of the Bible and am instead going to touch on something relevant to us geeks while using the Bible to try and inform my thinking. Today I want to talk about relational discomfort. I've been in a little bit of a funk lately. I've got a few different friends who, for a while now, have all been making self-destructive choices in their lives. Some of these choices may not be causing them any immediate problems, but are instead contributing to long-term issues that have and will continue to cripple them socially, emotionally, and most of all spiritually, if they remain on the same course. In each of these relationships, I'm very limited in my ability to help, certainly due to my limitations in my knowledge, in my strength of character. But the limitations I'm feeling the most are those imposed by the ones that I want to encourage and help. So rather than try to force anything on them, I just got to stand by and watch helplessly as they choose pain and separation from God. It's an ache that renews itself almost regularly as I spend time with each of these guys. It stays with me for days before fading and then catches me by surprise at seemingly random times, causing me to, you know, take time out to pray for them or maybe send them an email, reconnect with them again, at which time, you know, we schedule time to get together and the aching cycle continues. At the start of a recent cycle, these words spoken by Jesus came to mind from Matthew 23, verse 37. In the ESV, it says, "Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, the city that kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to it. How often would I have gathered your children together as a hen gathers her brood under her wings, and you were not willing?" I'm amazed that Jesus didn't give up or harden himself toward the people who harden themselves against God. How did he keep caring in these seemingly hopeless cases? How did he live with the ongoing pain of watching those he loves reject God again and again? It would have been so much easier to harden himself and choose not to feel that pain. I'd love to do that, to harden myself. I've been tempted to recently, tempted to reduce one or more of these friendships into empty socializing that revolves solely around hobbies and common interests. I'd love to choose not to care about the relationships these guys may or may not have with Jesus. But Jesus didn't do that. He never hardened himself, never spared himself any pain. He cared about even the hopeless cases, embracing the emotional wounds that come with that kind of investment. And I can only imagine that this persistent vulnerability is part of what made him a, quote, man of sorrows, as he's described in Isaiah 53, verse 3. I wonder if, and this is speculation, I don't want to put anything on you guys that isn't on you. But I do wonder if this instinct to avoid emotional investment is a little more common in us geeks than we realize. Many of us, not all of us, there's different types, all kinds of different types of geeks, but many of us avoid relationships in some form because we've been hurt or because we're afraid we will be hurt. Our hobbies, this came to mind. I thought this was interesting. Our hobbies also have a somewhat higher pleasure-to-pain ratio than other hobbies that require a bit of determination and discomfort to enjoy. Have you ever thought about that? I mean, you look at sports, you know, you got to exert yourself or maybe even exercise to prepare for your sport, you know, or there's just kind of fatigue that comes with it. There's just effort. There's just hard effort. Or if you're kind of outdoorsy, you like hiking and stuff, you know, you're more prone to injury and scrapes and, you know, bug bites and, you know, all that kind of stuff that comes with nature. Or learning an instrument, you know, you got to do your scales, baby. You know, and those are no fun, but you know, you got to practice those scales if you're gonna learn to do the fun songs that you want to do. You got to put the time in, you know. So there's, as far as our hobbies compared to many other hobbies, we have very little discomfort involved. You know, we just stop playing a game if we don't like it, find another game, you know, or read another book or watch another movie. You know, it's the worst we have is, oh, that didn't give me pleasure. You know, it's not that, you know, it's pretty rare that I think our particular hobbies actually bring us discomfort or pain. I don't know. I'm sure you could come up with examples. I guess I just mean in broad strokes, in general strokes compared to other hobbies. That's the sense that I get. So anyway, I ask myself, has the time I've invested in interests requiring no difficulty on my part, has that caused me to spiritually atrophy in some way? I don't know. I think the hobbies themselves certainly aren't the cause. I'm not saying anything like that, but the avoidance of discomfort may be. A few months after I stepped down from, some of you guys know that I was a worship pastor before I launched Spirit Blade Productions, and for 2 years. I worked at the church a total of 4 years, and for the last 2 years, I was the worship pastor at our church. And a few months after I stepped down from that position to pursue the development of Spirit Blade Productions, that would have been in 2006, my wife and I had dinner with Pastor Bob, my former employer, our senior pastor. As we reflected on the past 2 years of ministry I'd been a part of, much of which had been emotionally difficult for me, Bob made an observation about me that I've kind of hated him for ever since. And that's a joke. But he was dead on, and I hated that he was. Ugh. He said that he noticed in me a strong instinct to avoid pain, a lack of willingness to go through difficult experiences. He said that I had enormous capacity for relationships and great potential to impact the lives of others if I learned to overcome that. I hadn't left the position of worship pastor because of this aspect of my personality, but it had sure made the idea of quitting much easier. At the time, I was leading the ministry for those 2 years through some very healthy changes that needed to be made, that the leadership of the church was 100% behind. Some of the volunteers in the ministry weren't behind it. They didn't like those changes, and they made that repeatedly clear, to put it very kindly. And it really wrecked me emotionally repeatedly. I was just dealing with a lot of pain during those 2 years, even though it was very good ministry. In the last year or so, I believe I've been pushed more and more by the Holy Spirit to confront this issue of mine, of avoiding pain, to confront it on a day-by-day, even moment-by-moment basis. I think again of some words that Jesus spoke. Luke chapter 9, verse 23 in the ESV says, "And he said to all, if anyone would come after me," you guys know this verse, "if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." When it comes to pain and tragedy, I'm like a novice. I've been playing life on easy mode as much as I can, using invincibility codes every chance I get. But I know that embracing the possibility of relational pain will result in a richer life. I look at Mark chapter 8, verses 34 and 35, which repeats some of the material from Luke 9:23. It says, "And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, 'If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it.'" The Greek word for deny in verse 34, where he says, "let him deny himself," that means to lose sight of one's own interests. And the Greek word for save in verse 35 has, as usual, as I've mentioned, I think before on the podcast, it has a broad definition, not necessarily tied to salvation from hell. It can mean that, but it's not necessarily tied to that. It has the broad general definition of being rescued from separation from God, both now in this life and in eternity, rescued from the evils that we bring on ourselves. If I want to be rescued from the ongoing mess of this life, I need to lose sight of my own interests and follow the example of Christ, trusting in both his methods and his finished work on my behalf. That said, I've also been reminded that I shouldn't just be pouring my life into people whose spiritual lives are in crisis. I need to build and maintain relationships with other believers that can be a source of encouragement to me, even as I provide encouragement for them. If I only spend time with those who don't share my faith, if all or most of my close relationships are with people separating themselves from God, my tank is going to empty quickly. I've experienced this firsthand, both in the past and recently, and I will soon find myself in a discouraged funk in these situations, as I seem to find myself in now. And so I look again at Hebrews 10, 24, and 25 to kind of get me back on track. It says, "And let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So we want to do good works. We want to pour into people's lives who are, you know, in that kind of crisis mode. But we need to connect with other believers who we can stir up and who can stir us up to, so that we can more effectively be energized to go out and love others, to do those good works that Jesus has strategically prepared for us and set up for us to take part in. We need other believers to help prepare us and encourage us in that. Proverbs 10:13, verse 20 in the ESV says, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise." In other words, they have the right perspective of the world. They have the right view of how the world works, what this life is about. You know, if you walk with people that have those right views and that right perspective, then you'll have those right views. You'll have those right perspectives to help you navigate difficult waters. But it goes on to say, "But the companion of fools will suffer harm." Now, you know, I want to be clear on what fools refers to. We're not talking about morons or doofuses and stuff like that. Repeatedly in Proverbs, the word fool is attributed to someone who rejects God in some sense. So the companion of those who reject God are going to suffer harm. It just kind of happens. So anyway, right now, I sense myself on the edge of character growth. I'm making the decision to unplug my Game Genie. That doesn't date me, does it? And willingly start the tutorial mission. Just that's all I'm ready for right now. Just the tutorial mission of the game called Relational Discomfort. But I can't do this single player. This is an MMO. And I know, okay, I've milked that metaphor to death. The cow is gasping and dying, and it's really terrible. But my point of conclusion, I guess, is this. Relationships, as wonderful as they are going to hurt sometimes. People in faith crisis mode, if you will, are more than worth investing time and discomfort in. But as believers, we should also invest in relationships that can build us up. Even those of us who find ourselves as the, you know, often the one teaching or encouraging others. Just because we are in that mode a lot of the time doesn't mean that we don't need those things ourselves. That's why Christ created this unusual, unavoidably dysfunctional entity called the church. It's his primary, tangible framework for distributing blessings to the world. One day, relationships will be made perfect, and the struggles we experience with them now will be rewarded. So if you're anything like me or can relate to any of the situation I've described myself to be in, I want to invite you to come out here with me on the skinny branches and trust that Yahweh is holding us up, even when it feels like we're falling. I'll leave you with this. Isaiah 41, verse 10 from the ESV says, "Fear not," this is God speaking, "fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Well, I want to thank Zachary Oliver of the Theology Gaming Podcast and invite you guys again to go check out what he's doing. Feedback, guys, input. I want to hear from you. Request a review. Give me your thoughts, questions, whatever. It all helps me make the show better. Go to spiritblade.net/underground to record a message with your computer. You can also send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. I also want submissions, guys, either written that I can read on the show, or you can record something, some kind of segment or thoughts or whatever. Go to spiritblade.net/submissions for more information on how easy it is to geek out and be a part of this podcast. If you want to help make sure Spirit Blade Productions can keep doing what we're doing, or do more of it, both faster and better, you're invited to make a donation of any amount, anytime. Or you can become a part of the Spirit Blade Insider Program and get monthly exclusive goodies. For more information, you can check out spiritblade.net/donate. I want to remind you guys again of the open roles at Christian Geek Central. If you want to be a part of shaping the future of what Christian Geek Central will be, or if you, you know, if maybe you're not a visionary, but, you know, you're just thinking, you know, I'm not a visionary. I'm not really in a position to be able to donate to Spirit Blade Productions, but I would like to get involved. I believe in this thing. I want to help propel it forward. Go to ChristianGeekCentral.com, click on About CGC, and just scroll down to where it says how you can get involved. And you'll see information on the role that you could potentially play in Christian Geek Central. Also, I've been forgetting to do this. Not forgetting, because I really hadn't thought about it. I should have, though, until today. But I'm going to try and remind you guys or draw your attention to articles that are posted at Christian Geek Central that are not featured on the podcast. You know, my reviews get posted on Christian Geek Central, but I also share them sometimes in an expanded format as I kind of go down rabbit trails on the podcast. But there are occasionally other reviews, articles, and stuff like that that have appeared and are going to appear, hopefully with increasing frequency, at ChristianGeekCentral.com. Two of them that popped up recently on there are reviews from Nathan James Norman of the Untold podcast, which is part of the Christian Geek Central network. He posted reviews on the movie Beowulf, the CG animated movie you might remember, and also the Antonio Banderas movie The 13th Warrior, which I guess is actually based on the poem Beowulf. So those are up there. I'd highly recommend you check those out. They're really easy to find. The way that the page is laid out at ChristianGeekCentral.com, just scroll down a little bit and you'll find them really quick and easy. But anyway, I'll try to in the future always check and see if there are any articles that have been posted the week before leading up to the podcast, so I can draw your attention to stuff going on there that's not being talked about or featured on the show. If you want to submit a review or article for publication on Christian Geek Central, whether it's original material or something you've already posted elsewhere, that's cool by me. Shoot me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. Check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast and the Untold podcast. This month on the Untold podcast, when an ancient worm is unearthed by the people of Darrow, only an unlikely and unarmed hero can rescue the citizen trapped deep inside the nearby caverns. For more information about the CGC network, check out ChristianGeekCentral.com. All right, guys, next week, if God wants it to happen, that is, I'm going to have an interview introducing you all to the Geek Preacher, a Christian pastor with a unique convention ministry, plus a Phineas and Ferb review from Rickster. Till then, guys, thanks so much for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week and that you'll join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
The Spirit Blade Underground is a community supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Friends and with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.